From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
A school shooting in Texas, an elementary school. If you were governor, how do you stop this from happening? Mr. Ervin.
We need a governor who's going to stand up and fight against these acts. We need to make sure that we support our police and we support our neighbors and our families and our friends and these school children, that we don't allow weapons to get into the hands of criminals and those with mental illnesses.
The real Richard Ervin is a lifelong liberal Democrat. Need more proof? In text messages, Richard Ervin called President Trump an idiot and a bigoted racist. "I hate Trump," wrote Ervin.
Well, text messages reportedly sent by Republican candidate for Governor Richard Ervin might not help him with Trump supporters. And guns become a focus in the campaigns following another school shooting. We'll talk about that and more coming up on this episode of State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. He's a professor emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And with us, we have Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor. Joining us this week, Brendan Moore. He covers Illinois government and politics for Lee Enterprises. Brendan, it's always good to have you with us.
Glad to be back.
So, Hannah, let me go to you first. We have to talk about this school shooting this week in Texas. Reaction has been strong across the country, including right here in Illinois. And a lot of the discussion is on the possibility or the concerns that some people have regarding new restrictive gun laws. Now, here in Illinois, we already have some pretty restrictive gun laws, yet we still see a lot of gun violence. So where is this headed? At least, is it more at the federal level we're going to see, the calls for more action, or are we also seeing some calls to do more here in Illinois?
I think we're going to see both. I think that, obviously, action on the state level is more likely than on the federal level. Here in Illinois, we've had a lot of action with regard to our gun laws in the last 10 years after a major Supreme Court ruling, DC versus Heller, which, affirmed that, yes, in the District of Columbia, the weapons ban there was not constitutional. Then in 2013, the legislature, the governor, passed a concealed carry law. And since then, we've done some refining. Most recently, I would say last year, passed a FOID card refining bill that also included universal background checks. It did, we also had a debate over whether fingerprinting for, all concealed carry FOID card holders would be necessary. Ultimately, the moderate Democrats won out, and there was no fingerprinting law put in place. But we've had also a red flag bill, meaning in 2018, meaning that if a family member, a loved one was concerned about, their loved one's, mental health or ability, responsibility to have a gun in their home, they could, basically report to a judge, law enforcement, and ask for that weapon to be at least temporarily taken away from them. So, and we've also, had some talks about refining that. It really comes down to whether we might get a little bit, as a nation, it's really these AR-15s that have been, it's really hard to even imagine, but we must imagine just the carnage inflicted upon these really tiny children. These have been the guns that are behind some of the most massive shootings, not just in schools, but a lot of places. In the mid-90s, there was a federal ban on, these types of things, but that ban sunsetted. We've been living under this kind of regime for almost two decades now. And I guess really you could say we've seen an increase in mass shootings over that time period too. We are in Illinois a different type of state. Obviously, we are a democratically controlled state. We have different sorts of views on this, but we're also a very diverse state, as we talk about all the time on this program. when it comes to Illinois politics. There are so many different types of areas in Illinois that, you know, see guns differently. And, you know, it's an issue that also cuts across party lines.
Yeah, Charlie, let me bring you in on this, because you've watched the gun debates and listened to it for a lot longer than any of us. So, you know, have things changed that much through the years when we talk guns, especially at a policy level?
I would say probably not really, in the sense that there's the two schools of thought. There's the one school of thought that a lot of Democrats support, probably majority of the Democratic members of the legislature, that there are certain types of weapons that individuals should not have access to. There are certain types of individuals who should not be allowed to buy firearms. And then on the other hand, on the Republican side, the party nowadays seems to be in thrall to the National Rifle Association. We can't have any regulations about guns. People should be able to buy whatever they want, buy an armload of ammunition, wear body armor, but we'll protect schools. We'll have armed police in the school building. Teachers will be carrying. We'll outfit the kids with body armor and combat helmets, and they'll be safe. And I'm thinking, what a load of baloney. And the Republicans are talking, oh, we need more mental health services. Well, there were no indications that the shooter in Uvalde had mental problems. There were no red flags. He turns 18. He goes in and buys a couple of killing machines, a bunch of ammunition, shoots his grandma, and then goes and shoots all these little kids. I mean, it's just horrific. And in my mind, the way you deal with it is you draw the line and say there are certain types of weapons that individuals shouldn't have. If I'm not mistaken, you can't go to your local sporting goods store and buy a howitzer. You probably can't buy a tactical nuke. Why should you be able to purchase a weapon of mass destruction like an AK-47? Its only purpose is to kill other people. I can't imagine sportsmen, deer hunters, going out with an AK-47 looking for a trophy rack. And it's just ludicrous in my mind. And as I say, we in Illinois have taken steps more so than any other state in the Midwest to deal with this issue. The problem is it crosses state lines. There was a study done some years ago looking at the weapons that were illegally used and seized by Chicago police. 40% of those weapons came from Illinois gun stores, but more than 20% came from Indiana. And if you combine Indiana and Wisconsin together, a quarter of all these recovered guns the Chicago area came from those two states, Wisconsin and Indiana. And so the need to deal with it, and those are handguns, the need to deal with it has to be on a national level. And as I said initially, I think there should be laws banning assault weapons. As Hannah said, there was one, and it expired in 2004, and a Northwestern University professor who studies these mass shootings, Dr. Lori Post at the NU School of Medicine, says her research shows that the federal assault weapons ban would save many lives. And here's a quote: "We could have prevented 30 mass shootings that killed almost 400 people and injured more than 1,000 people. If we had maintained that same trajectory, we can see what we would have shaved off all these additional mass shootings. So they wouldn't have completely gone away, but they would have significantly been reduced." And she also made a note that most of the shooters are not mentally ill. They're just angry and hateful. As the person in Buffalo, he wasn't technically mentally ill. He was a white racist who was out to kill black people.
Well, it is an election year, of course, and issues like this, rightfully so, become topics in campaigns. Brendan, you've been following a lot of different races, races for Congress, but also on the state level. What are you hearing from candidates at this point?
Well, Sean, it kind of reflects the cultural and political divide that we see in this country on every issue, but especially this issue. There obviously were a couple of debates this past week in the race for governor and on the Republican side, and the candidates were all asked that question off the top, how would you prevent a tragedy like this from happening again? And there was an immediate pivot away from more gun control towards, as Charlie kind of alluded to, mental health and I guess other issues maybe kind of on the periphery, almost just trying to avoid the obvious conversation that perhaps we should be having about these dangerous weapons. I will say Richard Ervin, considered one of the front runners in the Republican field, did say that he would advocate for background checks. So maybe a little bit of a distinction there from some of his fellow candidates who, even when asked the question, also said, oh yeah, and we think the state FOID requirement should be eliminated, basically going the opposite direction. And as Hannah and Charlie alluded to, I mean, Illinois has taken steps in the past, decade or so, restrict or attempting to restrict the weapons getting into the hands of dangerous people. But problem is that Illinois is one state, or I guess we're kind of an island in a way. We're amongst a patchwork of states that have strict gun control, surrounded by states that have more loose restrictions. And so we saw, I guess, very predictable reactions from members of each political party. Obviously, Governor Pritzker called for more action, called for federal action, called for electing people, that support more gun control. Whereas Republicans are far more lax. We even saw, when asked about gun control in Texas, Governor Greg Abbott of Texas made a comment about Chicago, about how, well, there's more shootings happen in Chicago every day than, in schools in Texas. But as Charlie pointed out, a lot of those weapons that are doing those shootings come from surrounding states, Republican controlled states with less gun control. So I think that's the ultimate conundrum here, is that it reflects this deep national divide that we have. It's been the reason why the federal government can't take action. A divided Senate can't even have a debate on gun control. So Illinois can do what it wants in terms of stricter gun control. And it has over the years. I remember in 2018, after the Parkland shooting in Florida, and after police commander Paul Bauer in Chicago was shot and killed, there was a slew of actions. So maybe that'll happen again. Obviously, we're a Democratic-controlled state, but again, it's hard to see there being significant change, unless it comes from a national perspective, and that appears to be a non-starter at this point.
With you all's permission, I'd like to kind of close our discussion with a quote from Cardinal Blaise Kupich, who's the head of the Chicago Archdiocese of the Catholic Church. And he tweeted this on the day of the shooting. As I reflect on this latest American massacre, I keep returning to the questions, who are we as a nation if we do not act to protect our children? What do we love more, our instruments of death or our future? The Second Amendment did not come down from Sinai. The right to bear arms will never be more important than human life. Our children have rights too, and our elected officials have a moral duty to protect them. And I would say, amen, Cardinal Kupich.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Brendan Moore from Lee Enterprises. Well, let me pivot on to the governor's race. And Brendan, I'll stay with you here as far as the race for the Republican nomination for governor. We saw some candidate debates this week, and we also heard from Richard Ervin. What anything that's come up this week that may change the trajectory of this race?
Well, Sean, I guess we're seeing more of the same back and forth between the candidates sparring, well, honestly, about how conservative they are or are not. Richard Ervin has last week he finally started to do more open events to promote early voting, met the press a little bit, did not answer many questions, including whether or not he voted for President Trump in 2016 or 2020. And that's on the heels of a report from WTTW that Ervin in text messages allegedly called President Trump a liar and said some not very nice things about him. And those have quickly appeared in campaign advertisements for Darren Bailey, who's trying to obviously promote his ties to former President Trump. And obviously they had two separate candidate debates this past week. Ervin was on one stage with Paul Schimpf and Max Solomon. And then Bailey was on the stage with Jesse Sullivan and Gary Rabine. So they had their chance to, I guess, air their views in front of a wide audience, but obviously not head to head between the two front runners, which at this point appear to be Bailey and Ervin. I think we're obviously, as we get closer to the June 20th primary date, we're going to see some of these questions kind of come into focus. Again, Ervin's getting hit for his supposed comments about President Trump and how conservative he actually is. It's not just coming from Bailey. It's coming from Democratic Governors Association. And there's a new ad from Governor Pritzker's campaign team this week highlighting his ties to Ken Griffin, who's funding Ervin's campaign largely. So just another week on the campaign, I guess. But it's starting to heat up a little bit as we get closer.
Yeah, as soon as those texts became more of a public, more reporting on those, we knew that they would find their ways, Hannah, into an ad. And of course, we heard that at the top of the show. You think that's going to have much impact, though?
You know, I think it might. We saw polling from Richard Ervin yesterday. You know, again, like I said on the show last week, it's hard to compare the polls. They are all, you know, they all have their weaknesses. They're you know, a little bit different. They're asking questions in different ways, especially. The fact is, the race is getting, you know, it's a little bit closer. I think we saw some polling in the recent past, you know, showing Richard Ervin having more of a lead on Darren Bailey. I think the most important thing is the undecideds have gotten smaller and smaller. In this most recent poll, undecided is 22%. Big factor here that Darren Bailey has been hinting at, though, you know, it's obviously not a done deal yet, but he's really angling for that Trump endorsement. Obviously, so was Gary Rabine, but, you know, like Brendan said, Darren Bailey is clearly, he and Richard Ervin have made themselves the front runners, and it's no surprise. You know, Darren Bailey has been very vocal about the governor's COVID restrictions for 2 years. That's how he made a name for himself. Otherwise, a state rep, as he was then, from far southern southeast Illinois, really, would not be, no one would know who he was had it not been for his vocal pushing back against the governor's COVID restrictions, filing all those mostly failed lawsuits, you know, and Richard Ervin because of Ken Griffin's money. So anyway, it's no surprise that these text messages made it into a campaign commercial. I think I predicted that last week and on the show. And but we're going to wait for the Trump endorsement, see if it comes or not for Darren Bailey. But it is interesting to see, you know, I feel like there's been a lot of analysis over whether Trump's endorsement has made a difference for Republican candidates in other states. And we've seen kind of different outcomes, most recently this week in Georgia, where the Trump-endorsed candidates in the Republican primaries for both governor and secretary of state both failed.
Charlie, the Republican poll, one of the polls that was released earlier, did indicate that a number of Republican voters would be swayed by a Trump endorsement. So let's say Bailey doesn't wind up getting the endorsement, because even if he does, a lot of people are voting now, so it might be getting a little late for it. But certainly these ads that attack Irvin and have him bad-mouthing Trump would certainly, I would think, could play a key role here.
Yeah, I would say, as a practical matter, probably Darren Bailey's best hope to prevail, 4 weeks from this coming Tuesday, would be an endorsement from President Trump. Because as that poll that you alluded to suggested, something, if I recall the number correctly, like 57% of Republican voters would be more inclined to support someone who was endorsed by President Trump. And Hannah, you were correct. Trump took it on the nose in Georgia. But on the other hand, the people who beat him were real legitimate Republicans. And I say that kind of with an asterisk, because one of the arguments that's being made against Richard Irvin is that he's a Democrat. As a matter of fact, I got a slick mailer a couple of days ago, and it's from People Who Play by the Rules PAC, which is Dan Prof's operation. And he says, what kind of Republican says he supports Black Lives Matter strongly and passionately? The kind of Republican who voted in 7 of the last Democratic primaries. What kind of Republican supports BLM and J.B. Pritzker? A Democrat like Richard Irvin. In the Republican primary for governor, vote for, you know, a Republican. Vote no on Democrat Richard Irvin. So they don't say who to vote for, and they can't under the federal election rules, but they make it pretty clear that Richard Irvin is a Democrat. And I think there's a contrast between Governor Kemp in Georgia, who there's no question that he's been a Republican through and through forever. And his problem with Donald Trump was that he would not lie and cheat and steal for Donald Trump and say that Donald Trump won Georgia when he didn't. And so that got the former president on his case. And so I see that distinction. And I think, as I said earlier, the only thing that's really going to help put Bailey over the top is if he gets Trump endorsement. Then the next question is, if Bailey wins, what's he gonna do in the fall? And I say that because at the mini debate that Brendan mentioned, he referred to Chicago as a crime-ridden, corrupt, dysfunctional hellhole. Well, there are a lot of people in Chicago who vote, and I'm not sure that they appreciate being told that they live in a dysfunctional hellhole. So we'll have to see how this plays out.
All right, we'll continue to watch that. Still a few weeks to go before the election. And this is State Week. Time now for our notes from the field. Hannah, let's go to you first.
So this week, former State Representative Louis Arroyo was sentenced for his crime of soliciting bribes for the what's called sweepstakes machine industry, which is kind of a gray area in Illinois whether or not these so-called sweepstakes machines are actually legal. We've still not really sussed that out, and they're basically kind of a competitor to legal gaming machines that you see in bars and restaurants. This is the thing that also took down former state senator Terry Link.
Okay, and Brendan?
Yesterday, a pair of House committees had held a subject matter hearing on utility rates in downstate Illinois. So starting June 1st, customers in the Ameren service area, customers who get Ameren electricity from Ameren are expected to see an increase of about $52 per month on their utility bills. I believe that would equal about $626 per year. A lot of it is because of what's going on in the world right now in Ukraine. Energy prices have spiked significantly, but also a lot of it also has to do with the long-term problems in downstate Illinois, where we've been having to import a lot of energy, and that's going to continue. And so it's going to be a longstanding concern for folks downstate, and again, illustrates the kind of the pretty wide difference between the two energy markets in Illinois, the Ameren service area in downstate and the ComEd area up in northern Illinois, where they have the nuclear plants that can provide baseload energy. So not great if you're a downstate ratepayer, but it's going to be coming next week.
Okay. And Charlie.
We talked last week about the fact that the U.S. Census Bureau had done a review of the 2020 census and came out and said that their study showed Illinois was very likely undercounted in the 2020 census. And that if you look at that error, as a matter of fact, we would have gained as many as 250,000 residents since the 2010 census. Now, that doesn't change what the official census number is. The official census number is the one that the Census Bureau put out last year, and that will be the official census number for 2020, and that won't change until we do 2030. But, and the state's share of members of the House of Representatives, the apportionment doesn't change either. The number of the Census Bureau announced in 2021 is the official number. But because of the undercount, this couple of days ago, Governor Pritzker sent a note to President Biden and the federal government asking that they increase the state's share of federal funding to reflect the Census Bureau studies that showed Illinois was undercounted by 250,000 residents. And the Democrats in the state's congressional delegation also requested that the adjusted numbers, the survey numbers, were used so that we could get a larger share of roughly, I think it's something like $1.5 trillion in federal funding that flows to state and local governments based on census data. So we'll see where that goes. We're not going to save a congressional seat, but we maybe could wind up with more federal money.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Anna Meisel, and Brendan Moore with Lee Enterprises. Remember, you can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or iTunes. Just look for State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.